Thanks for joining us on the JX today. We start in Maxville, way far away from our corner of Oregon. The site of the old timber town is all the way in the opposite corner in the far northeast of the state. Maxville is mostly a ghost town now, but a century ago it was a thriving mill town, unique for being home and workplace for both black and white workers. Its centennial was celebrated a year ago, and there are further developments in its commemoration, including a recent grant linking Maxville to Southern Oregon University's Sociology and Anthropology program. We have two guests and an additional host. Gwen Trice is the founder and executive director of the Maxville Heritage Interpretive Society. Hi, Gwen.
Hi. Good morning.
Gwen joins us by phone. In the studio is Mark Tveska, professor of anthropology at Southern Oregon University. Mark, welcome back.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
And JPR's Roman Battaglia is also interested in the story and joins me for the interview. Welcome, Roman.
Hey there. I was interested first, Gwen. We had people from the High Desert Museum in Bend talk about Maxville in February, but it's our first visit with you. Could you tell us a little bit, how did Maxville come to be? I mean, especially at a time when I believe black exclusion laws in Oregon were still on the books when it started, and, you know, there was still a lot of racism around the country, especially in the South.
Well, it was really brought together by an organization, a lumber company called the Bowman Hicks Lumber Company. They had holdings in Missouri and in Louisiana, and they, on their march toward the timber, the existing timber, arrived in Oregon. They hired four local people to help scout an area for their timber company, and they found an area near a meadow called Bishop's Meadow. And they found that to be the place that they would have the town site of Maxville. They not only recruited both black and white Southerners and some from the Midwest to the town of Maxville, they incorporated logging camp number 5 that was already located here in Wallowa County as part of their town site.
Mm-hmm. So
that
they brought
1923.
Yeah, so they brought laborers from the Midwest and from the South, black and white,
yes,
up to this area for this lumber company.
They also had Greek loggers at the Maxville site.
Oh. Now, I want to understand, Gwen, was Maxville, in fact, integrated, or did they still have the town divided?
The town was absolutely divided on two different sides. They had two different schools for the kids to attend, and they had a baseball club, but they had a black and a white team that were at Maxville that played each other. Now, when they played other small towns in our region, they teamed up and played to represent Maxville.
So, Mark Tveska, I've talked about this from your perspective. It seems like the uniqueness of Maxville makes it something of a dream for an archaeologist, anthropologist.
Yeah, it's a really unique opportunity and a timely opportunity. And archaeology excels at telling stories that are not commonly told. And the experience of black families and black professional loggers in rural Oregon is definitely a story that has not been told before. So, yeah, it's an exciting opportunity.
So talk about the connection established now between Southern Oregon University and the Maxville Heritage Interpretive Center.
Well, the connection, Gwen and I met doing some committee work for the state of Oregon on the State Advisory Committee for Historic Preservation, and I learned about her project and the great work that the Maxville Heritage Center was doing. And we just got to know each other and found a connection in the possibility of doing some archaeology there, and just one thing built on another and developed this project.
We are talking about Maxville, Oregon, in the far northeast corner of the state, and a connection to Southern Oregon University. We have both Maxville and Southern Oregon University represented with Mark Tveskov, a professor of anthropology from SOU, and Gwen Trice, the founder and executive director of the Maxville Heritage Interpretive Center. Roman Battaglia from JPR News is with me to do the interview, and you can take part as well with your emails to jx@jeffnet.org.
Gwen, I believe you have some personal connections to Maxville, right?
I do.
Tell us a little bit about those.
So my father and grandfather were among the first African-American loggers that were recruited in 1923. My father was 19 at that time, and they came by boxcar from Pine Bluff, Arkansas, where my father's family stayed in a logging camp there. So dad came, his brother. I had cousins that came later. My grandmother, like all the women, came late later. So the men, both on both sides, established their space, and then their women and children came later. So this is a part of my family history of how we got to Oregon, and I didn't really know this part of it until around 2003.
Wow. So, I mean, it sounds like your whole family ended up, or a lot of your family ended up coming over and living in Maxville. And so it's kind of a big part of your family history.
Yes.
I'm kind of curious, were there other communities like Maxville in Oregon? I mean, what makes Maxville, you know, a special place?
Well, Maxville's definitely special. A lot of different families were a part of that community and were brought in. There's just so much. Hold on just a second. There's just so much energy that has come out of the space from the people that were a part of it. And so what we look at the African-American families, we look at what took place when people moved out of the area into another one. And so, for instance, I think about Vanport, and I think about the town of Vernonia. So Vernonia was a town that had not only African-American loggers, but they had Filipino loggers and Japanese loggers in that town. I've interviewed folks from a logging community called Mount Emily Lumber Company, and they had Native American loggers and Japanese loggers and Greek loggers that also came back and forth to Maxville. And what we found is a lot of the loggers, they worked in different logging towns along their way here. So as they came from the south, they'd stop at, say, McNary, Arizona. And McNary used to be a town in Louisiana. But that group, that timber town in McNary, Louisiana, took the name, took the workers, took the equipment, and they went to Arizona on an Indian reservation and set up shop there. So at that place, they had African-American loggers, they had Mexican-American loggers, Indian and white.
Yeah, so it sounds like Maxville was sort of this like hub, especially a diverse hub for a lot of these logging communities, you know, in Oregon and, you know, people on their way to Oregon.
Yes.
So, Gwen, what happened? Why did Maxville become a ghost town? When did the timber run out or the mill close or any of that?
Well, part of it was during the time that the banks began to fail. And a lot of people, and the war was beginning, and a lot of people during that time, they were very, I want to say, patriotic. A lot of people wanted to be a part of their family of serving the country and going to war, and others that didn't, they were in the industry and they went out to Portland, to Vanport. They went to the shipbuilding areas. They dispersed out to California. Weed, California was another town that was quite large. It was, I think, the largest timber town in the United States with 6,000 employees. And I know that was another place that my father worked for a period of time in that space. So it was really due to the industry bottoming out because of what was going on within the nation in the Great Depression. And that company sold the steel from the rails. They picked up a lot of their holdings. In 1933, the town officially closed, but there were still people that lived at Maxville for a period of time until sort of around the mid-1940s. There were a few people that hadn't dispersed to, say, La Grande or Portland or down to the town of Wallowa. Some went to Grass Valley in California and stayed in the industry.
We're talking about Maxville, Oregon, in the far northeastern part of the state with Gwen Trice, the founder and executive director of the Maxville Heritage Interpretive Center. Mark Tveskov from Southern Oregon University, a professor of anthropology, is going to be involved with Maxville to a greater degree in the future. And, of course, Roman Battaglia from JPR News is here handling the interview with me. You can join us with a quick email to jx@jeffnet.org. So, Mark, that must present some challenges in exploration, a town that grew up suddenly and about 10 years later began to come apart.
Yeah, but it's a very exciting challenge, you know, and talking about the different places around the Northwest where similar processes played out, like Weed or the like. One of the advantages that Maxville has is Weed is still a town and there's still a mill down there. This was a place, Maxville was a place up on the top of a mountain that was largely but not completely abandoned in the Great Depression and then eventually completely abandoned. So from an archaeological point of view, it's a clean slate. It doesn't have like a modern town sitting on top of it like so many other places. So it actually is set up as an ideal place to conduct archaeological research in so many ways.
Such a haul for anyone from SOU. I mean, this is pretty much the longest trip you can take from Ashland and still be in Oregon.
That's right. I joke because we're closer to Montana than Ashland when we're in Maxville. It's a 9-hour drive, so it does have some logistical issues. But I love it up there. My students love it up there. And Gwen and the community there are lovely hosts.
Hmm. I mean, in addition to, you know, getting up there, I mean, what are you hoping to discover there? I mean,
well, we've spent the last 2 years working. I have a colleague, Rory Becker, from Eastern Oregon University, and we've been working with Gwen to basically catalog the layout of this town on the landscape. We have a lot of rich oral history from Maxville. We have aerial photography that we've looked at and old maps, and we've basically tried to triangulate in where specific things are on the site. Maxville Heritage hopes to continue to work on opening the site to the public. So so we're providing a technical service where, like, this is where this was exactly. And then on an anthropological point of view, to your question, this September is going to be our first attempt to do some excavation and gather samples of artifacts, ideally from, for example, places where the black loggers and their families lived and where the white families lived, so we can have a comparative sample of artifacts to use in contrast to, say, the oral histories of the site and look at the lived experience of people in that space.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't realize that. I was just thinking you were just going to go there and dig up those artifacts, but I didn't realize that there was a lot of other technical work in terms of, like, finding where all of these building locations were so it can kind of be mapped out and help people learn more about what the site actually looked like back when it was actually built.
Yeah, I mean, and that's exactly what we do. You go out there, and it's a beautiful mountainous area with, like, bricks and ceramic and old railroad grades scattered around, and it's our job to make sense out of it.
Gwen, what exists on the Maxville site now? You have one restored building at the Heritage Interpretive Center. Is that right?
Well, the building that we restored up there is different. Our Maxville Heritage Interpretive Center is located in the heart of the Arts and Cultural District in downtown Joseph, mm-hmm. Oregon. So Maxville is about an hour drive from there up into the tree line. And the building that was restored was the original administration building that they ran the business of Maxville out of. So 1,600 square feet, 3 rooms, bathroom, kitchen, and a main room with a two-story stone fireplace.
We got about a minute left. Is there something of a balancing act, Gwen, and that you want people to know about Maxville, but you might have some reservations about the site opening up and people tromping all over it?
Well, we find it for us is a real sacred place, and it's a place for healing, for understanding the systemic cultural impacts of the day and looking at today and where we are. And truly, the idea of opening it up and to bring in students, bring in lifelong learners to the space, while keeping in mind we want to have a light footprint on the site because it is an archaeological site, is what does it look like to make those headways? And while we're doing that, also work with the tribes, it's Nez Perce land. Mm-hmm. And so we want to understand and be stewards of it with that in mind of having our Nez Perce partners just be good listeners and be good listeners to the land as well.
All right. A lot of work yet to come to know more about Maxville and its brief history on the Oregon landscape as a logging town with both black and white workers. Gwen Trice is the founder and executive director of Maxville Heritage Interpretive Center. Gwen, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Mark Tveskov is a professor of anthropology at Southern Oregon University. Mark, thank you.
Thank you.
And Roman Battaglia from JPR News. Good to have you.
Happy to be here.